Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Lenihan.
Well, I certainly am happy that you've joined us and found us. If you're a song crafter or you're a fan of music, this is the place right here. We're going to talk about the songs and how they're written, get up under the hood when we can. I want to also remind you that the songs that you're hearing on our show, what's unique about our shows, we play them live around the dining room table when we can, but I also like to put some recorded stuff on so you can hear the full production. But we have a Spotify playlist right now called Songwriter Connection, The Songs. And so a lot of the songs that you hear on these shows, you'll be able to hear on the playlist. So if you're on Spotify, please check that out. I would certainly appreciate it. You know what's really interesting about songs? You know, it could be at the right time, the right place. You hear a song that hits you really hard. Do you know what I'm talking about? And it becomes almost a part of your soundtrack, let's say. Can I tell you a personal story about mine? I'm going to tell you. In 1989, summer of 89, we moved from Cleveland, where I grew up, on rock and roll, radio, guitars, cars, and baseball. And we moved to Cincinnati. And it, you have to tell, if you've ever moved to another city, you know how stressful that can be. I mean, finding a house, moving all the furniture, moving all your stuff. And it was just really hard. A brand new job, getting used to that at the same time. It was hard. My wife, Patty, gave up a great job teaching in Cleveland to not be able to find one for a while in Cincinnati. So things were really hard. And the job was really stressful. And I remember thinking, man, I came home one night and my mother-in-law was visiting. And she always called me David. David, you look so stressed. Sit down. And I go, Mom, I really think that I made the biggest mistake in my life. I really do. I almost feel trapped, you know. She said, honey, it's going to work out. Would you like a value? That's my mother-in-law. So yeah, Mom, I'll take a double. But one day I came home after a really hard work, and I used to love to turn on, do you remember when TV stations like MTV, GAC, the Nashville Network, they used to play videos back-to-back, and you could put them on and just watch them. So I think it was Great American Country, one of those. And I sit back, and this song comes on, and it hit me really hard. I mean really hard. It was called Hard Times for an Honest Man. And can I play just a little bit of this right here? Because like I'm going to start right with my favorite line in the song.
You're still mending fences that were made to climb. Yeah, these are hard times for an honest man. Just down on his luck, take a last look at the dreams that you had.
But it's a great song, and it hit me really hard. Take a last look at the dreams that we had. The guy who wrote that song and who performed that song is with us, and I've followed his career ever since. It's James House. James House, welcome.
Thanks, Dave.
To my house, man. Good to see you. Yeah.
That song changed the arc of my career.
It did, huh?
Completely, yes.
Yeah.
It did.
You were here in Nashville?
I was living in L.A. at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I'd been through a couple of record deals.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was raised on music. I come from a musical family. My dad and uncle sang. They were called the House Brothers Quartet. And
House Brothers Quartet.
Music was...
Was that him in the video? Was it, I've been to ask.
That's Mom and Dad in the video.
So. Yeah, and it's still out there on YouTube. Check it out. So.
And we got to ride horses that day. And that was shot in L.A. at a studio. I think Bob Hope owned this. It was a cowboy ranch.
Oh, okay.
It was used out there. So we shot it out there and everything because they were on the West Coast at that point. But that song... I remember I'd been doing rock and other stuff and singing jingles and doing whatever you do in Los Angeles at the time. And I had never really kind of, I grew up on country. It was part of my roots. I used to sing it with my mom and dad.
All the time. Yeah.
I had never written a song. And after watching the CMA Awards in 87, November, I think they were on. And I watched the awards that night. And I was inspired. So I wrote that song, started about midnight, and finished at 6 in the morning. And I went and recorded it, and my publisher sent it up, just secretly sent it out to Tony Brown out here in Nashville.
Tony Brown.
Yeah, who was at that point, Tony, first of all, he was Elvis's last piano player. And I've got a great Tony Brown story for him with Elvis.
Yeah.
And anyway, she sent it out, and Tony he loved the song and gave me a record deal. So I moved out here in January 8th, 88. This is home. It's been home ever since, and can't imagine living anywhere else.
Yeah. Of course, you know, you look at that's mullet, James.
A serious mullet.
A serious mullet. Hey, I love it. You know, I've always said if my hair would grow down, I would have a mullet probably. I know it grows out, you know. So. But anyway, you got a haircut, and and here you are. You know, I'll tell you a little bit about James. In addition to being a great artist, a great songwriter, too, you've had an amazing songwriting career. Songs done by Diamond Rio and Dwight Yoakam, Ain't That Lonely Yet, and these are all songs I've played on the radio many times. And you've written, I think, the song that really demonstrated the vocal prowess of Martina McBride, which is a classic. You co-wrote on a Broken Wing.
Yeah, that was one of those days. It was actually the way that was written. I had a standing appointment. I was writing for Sony Tree at that point.
Sony Tree,
and they have
Bobby
something
Braddock,
over there called
the Biggins.
Yeah. It was great. It was a great place. The best songwriters were there, and the energy was incredible. Donna Hilly was alive and running it, and she just, it was a great company to be at. And they have a firehouse there that they have the writer rooms, and they had a little work studio in there. This is before anybody had home studios. They had a little place where you could go record. So I had a standing Friday booking in there, and I had nothing that morning. What had happened is my sister, I was living on, they living on the West Coast when we're over here, and she was going through some rough times with this guy. Uh-huh. And that kind of weighed on me that morning.
Yeah.
And that's where, and Phil Barnhart showed up, and we seemed to be on the same, and Sam Hogan was there. We seemed to be on the same wavelength, because that song fell out of us.
Did it?
In a couple of hours. We were writing lyrics, I was singing in the next room, and it just kind of, the demo came together. In fact, there's the choir that's on it. There's a, you know, a black female singing the black choir. The choir is fantastic.
Yeah.
But I was faking it on the on the demo, so I'm doing
the demo.
And with a broken wing, you know, I'm stacking those vocals up, but it ended up getting got the cut
awesome.
With Martina.
What a great, great song. And of course, you've got this new book out, and I wanted to talk about that, because it's an audio book, and you narrate it, and what I love about it is 10 chapters, you tell your whole life. I've listened to it like maybe 3 times already, James, and at the end of every chapter you play a song.
Yeah,
it kind of sums it all up. And it's out there everywhere. So tell us about Lost in Laurel Canyon.
Well, first of all, it was like, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I love them.
Yeah,
and, you know, I drive a lot around the road, or I listen to them at night.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a fun medium to do. Tell a story. Because we do it at the Bluebird, but we tell how the song was written a bit.
Uh-huh.
But this was more, I thought I'd expand it just a little. Not long. I mean, the whole book's only been a little over an hour long. But, yeah, it was like, and end it with a song about that time. So, you know, basically, because I've been at this quite a while.
A little bit. Huh?
For being, you know, I mean, I'm famous at my house. But I, you know, I've had a pretty amazing career to be able to still
really
be doing this.
Yeah.
And the stories are, I just told the little bits of them. But so to me, the idea was, all right, in musical influence, what was going on with me at that time? And then the song about it, so the opening song is really country. It's kind of a California shuffle, which is, you know, the Buck Owens stuff. Mom was a big Buck Owens fan, and you could time our Saturday nights by a Buck Owens record, you know, when we were kids. And So that's where it kind of came from. They started formulating, and so I was writing the music, and I thought, what a fun way. I know some other people have done musical e-books before, audiobooks, but I don't think I've done it where it's a record and stories and full production, and so and then put out the album afterwards. So it was, really? To me, it was entertaining, because mm-hmm. I made, you know, probably 10 albums at this point. And it was just a fun way to do it and tell that story. And I'm doing actually another one too.
Good.
So I'm on another one with a whole other story that's going on. We can talk about that later. But
that's cool.
Yeah, that's been that's how that happened, and it's been a lot of fun.
And did you write all these songs specifically for this book?
I wrote most of them. I had two of them already, and mm-hmm. I had a song called "The Ending," and I thought, oh well, heck, I don't, you know, this is before I'd written anything. Well, I've got the last song, you know, and the ending's really about the beginning. In an odd way. So that was written, and Emily was written.
Oh, that's great.
But it was like, when we were writing it, and we were talking, I was just talking about, thinking about it, was all that that help you get when you're a young artist, you know, you get help along the way.
You do.
And people kind of take you in, and that's about all those.
And you're doing the same. You're giving it back to different younger artists that you're mentoring and pulling along, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's always one. And there's another kid I'm working with. It's great to see, trying to help these kids. You know, tell them, if nothing else, just what not to do.
What not to do.
And, you know, they're, you know, so much beyond what I was at that point in my career. I mean, it was all just music, but now they're marketing agent. They have to market their own stuff.
Oh,
it's a whole nother ball game.
It
out
really
there.
Is.
It still comes back to the song. It always does. It doesn't matter how much you market stuff. If you don't have a song to hang it on, it's all for naught.
It really is. And there's been a lot of artists over the years that just couldn't find that one big song, you know. Whether they wrote it themselves or not. But songs are like gold, aren't they?
Yeah,
they are gold.
And that song, Hard Times, was, it changed my life. I mean, mm-hmm. Tony produced it for MCA Records. Vince Gill sings on backgrounds on that. And
I was going to mention that.
And funny, I didn't know who Vince was when he came in the studio. And you know, I knew that. And as soon as he started singing, I'm like, and hanging out, and hung out for a couple hours. I'm like, oh, this guy, what? What am I doing in here?
And just a few years later.
I Call Your Name came right out after that. And changed his life and everybody. That was an amazing record to make, too, because Tony brought in the best guys in the business. Glenn D. Harden was on piano. Mm-hmm. Glenn and Tony were both Elvis's piano players.
How about that?
Tony told me a funny story.
Love to hear it.
I saw him not so long ago. Uh-huh. He was playing piano for Elvis at the very end. And Elvis loved Tony because Tony grew up on gospel music, and Elvis loved gospel music. And Tony was staying. He was downstairs. Elvis had gone to bed, but he called for Tony to come up. He wanted to talk to him about some music coming up. And Tony goes upstairs, and there's Elvis in his pajamas. And the pajamas have got the high collar.
Of course. Right. Of course.
That's just the greatest visual.
I can see it.
So, yeah. But I got to know all those musicians, Glenn, who played on the Elvis record, and the drums, and I mean, the bass. All the musicians were just my heroes. And when I moved out here, Nashville was so open. You could see people, you know, Don Everly would be having dinner, you know, across from you at Houston's. And and I was just beside myself meeting him.
You were living the dream, weren't you?
Yeah, and still am.
Absolutely.
And I got to meet most of the great heroes, Cash and Waylon and those guys. So I've been very lucky.
How about that? That's just awesome. Well, let's play a little something from Lost in Laurel Canyon. It's a great book. I guarantee you will love it, and you will listen to it time and time again. And this is one called Whiskey Nights.
Yeah.
And tell me about the
It's not pro whiskey.
It's not pro
whiskey. It's about the downside of it. And,
I
got caught up in some stuff, and it was taking its toll on. And I had friends around me said, you know, you need to back off, because I was born with this. I was given the gift. You know, I was blessed with talent.
Yeah.
And at some point I was...
We're going to talk about that a little
bit. I was hurting myself. And that's what this song's about.
It's easy to fall into it in that musician kind of life. Because, you know, and I look at it, because, you know, you're playing at nightclubs and bars.
Yeah.
There's whiskey there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, when you're young and you're drinking and you're on stage, you sweat it out.
You sweat it out. Yeah.
It's when you stop. And I was making records and I wasn't on the tour. It was like catching up to me. And I went, yeah, you got a problem.
Oh, boy.
But write a song about it.
In a haze, last call, lost faith. I'll be the first to say, whiskey nights, whiskey days, broken hearts never far away. Bittersweet memories stay. Echo whiskey nights and days. Lies told with every sip, time slows and it hurts. The heat from the spirit's grip.
From the new record Lost in Laurel Canyon, which is also an audio book. James House is our guest. James, great song. Let's start about your beginnings. And first of all, I want to talk about you were there in the Laurel Canyon area. That was legendary music back in those days. And you were there with all the great songwriters. And you probably saw them all, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I saw them play, which was great. I didn't get to know a lot of them. I met some of the Fleetwood Mac folks and Eagle folks when I was living out there. But more than anything, the history of music coming out of Laurel Canyon was loomed large.
It did,
you know, Jackson Brown.
Yeah,
you know,
still one of my favorites.
And the Eagles and Joni Mitchell and Crosby, Stan. Stills, and Nash. Was just loomed large as a songwriter, and you know, like, wow.
Yeah.
And the, you know, it's a metaphor, Lost in Laurel Canyon. When my band, we got signed, we were living in Lake Tahoe at that point, and we got signed, and then we moved down to Los Angeles. Part of us were, they were going back and forth, and they'd put us in this house on the, you know, up in the canyon, and then we had another one on the coast, and we were just like, you know, walking around with our head in the stars.
Oh,
so,
that.
And it ended up, you know, it was rough on the band because, just, you know, bands are successful. Bands break up for two reasons. Either they're very successful or they're,
or
not.
They're not.
You know, and that's really it. So,
and usually,
you know,
it happens after you've taken the photo for the band.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know. And so in our case, it was, it never really happened. But we would, we spent about 3 years on that label and making the record and them flying us around. It was an incredible experience. I mean, they flew us to Muscle Shoals just to do demos.
How about that?
And we were living, you know, kids.
Love Muscle Shoals.
Living up in Northern
California.
Which
studio did you guys record there?
We were at Wishbone.
Wishbone, okay. Yeah,
and they rented a house for us.
Isn't that great?
And I was in a... We did a little guitar pull. Guitar pulls when, you know, you're at a party and it just goes around the room. Everybody sings their song. You know? I thought I was, you know, my turn. I sang my song. You know, I've got a record deal kind of stuff. I'm 21 years old. And the guy next to me is Mac Mackin.
Oh, God.
Who's phenomenal, you know. Yeah. It was, this went, oh, man, I've got work to do.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, it was just
inspiring, you know.
Yeah. Had that Alabama literature feel to his lyrics. And, of course, he was, you know, with Buffett for years and years and a great musician. So, that was my first experience coming south.
Ooh, about that? That was a gold slap punk right there.
In a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah, I'm always... The thing about music I love is just you can never know everything. And, you know, learning is always there.
You grew up in Sacramento?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so that's about 2 hours to Lake Tahoe. And you would play a lot back... Or that whole...
I just did that whole circle. I grew up in... We had a ranch in Southern Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And my dad and uncles all lived... They all toured a lot. So we at one point, the whole family lived on a ranch with four houses.
Wow.
And all the kids were there and
stuff. Very close family.
And then they moved to Sacramento, the whole family. All of them. I have 21 first cousins. So all the brothers and everybody moved to Sacramento. And they bought all the houses in a cul-de-sac.
Wow.
So we had all five houses. You know, so there was four brothers and the sister. And so we had, you know, there's 21 kids.
It had to be
there.
So hard to move from there.
It was great. You know, as we talk about us cousins, still very close. We're like 21 brothers and sisters, you know.
Yeah.
And I have two brothers and a sister. And they,
that's great.
We talk about how the music was so important in our lives. So, So Sacramento, I ended up finishing high school there. And I was that kid who went home every night after school and, by the time I hit 18, I knew about 200 songs because I knew I wanted to go right to it. I started college, then I started playing and auditioning around, and that was the singer-songwriter era. Yeah. So I hit it at the right time, and so I was working 7 days a week. Next thing I know, so you know, college went away in about a year because I couldn't make it to class. I was playing four hours a night, you know, making a living quickly.
Well, you had an education in another way, so
some of it was a little too soon,
but I bet you had a blast.
That did,
you know, and it's a really good point for up and coming artists and songwriters that I know listen to this show. It's important to learn those covers and get out there and just perform
it. Yeah, well, it becomes part of your songwriting DNA.
Doesn't it?
All those songs you learn, all those chord changes.
And whether you realize it or not, you're learning the craft of songwriting by studying these songs and putting them together and learning it.
Yeah, I mean, so when you do a chord like that and then do that chord.
Yeah.
I mean, that just comes from a Beatles song, you know.
Yeah.
Or before that. So all those little things add up as a songwriter. And I always ask my friends from Texas, because there's a lot of great musicians come out of Texas and Oklahoma.
Crazy.
Why? What happened? Why are you guys so good? Why are you so rounded?
Right.
Same deal. They learned everything because they played the clubs and the dance halls. So they had to play everything from
and in every key.
In every key, in rock and country and everything. Yeah. So they became well-rounded musicians that way. You can't learn enough.
You really can't. And you always are. You know,
and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah,
you know, I learned another song. I was trying to think of what I learned the other day. I was just I don't know the chord changes to that. It was beautiful. Oh, it was Johnny Rivers, Poor Side of Town.
Oh,
and
great
I saw him playing it, and I thought, oh, I must learn the chords that I can't remember right now. But I just sat there and learned the song for another hour. It's just incredible. It was his only number one. And I was a big Johnny Rivers fan.
Big. This guy's great. And for me, too, not too long ago, I was just playing this riff. I go, what is this?
Yeah.
And I started, that's the Cars. I don't mind you. And then that's got an interesting chord progression.
Yeah.
So I had to learn it.
Yeah, so. All that stuff is great for you.
Yeah, it really is. Talk about Emily. And let's play Emily into the break. I love this song. This is on the Lost in Laurel Canyon album, and there's a really cool story about it, too.
Well, Emily, in the book is, I was going through some tough times and I had some people look out for me.
Yeah.
And I was, I got warned a few times and then this one person came along and said, I think you need to just stop for a minute and slow down. Because I was, you know, I hit it hard when I was 18. All the next thing I know, I'm working 7 days a week and rocking it and making pretty good money for a kid.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, this song is about, the name's been changed to protect the innocent, as they say. Yeah. No one but you can save me from myself. When I was drowned, there wasn't nobody else. When I was chasing street lights on the wrong side of town, you lifted me up, baby. Please don't set me down. No one but you can color in the gray, make sense of the chaos, push it all away. Oh, Emily, you're good to me, more than I deserve. Been walking all night long, everywhere my. No one but you, no one but you. Before you caught my eye, I didn't know I could fly. Ooh.
Table, it's James House, and you're listening to the Songwriter Connection podcast. We'll be right back.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging, it's often your hormones too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com.
You know,
back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
I was excited to get back to it. Sorry, Kate. We are also on YouTube, and I want you to check us out there. Although we're not a video podcast, it's important to be there. So help spread the word by clicking and subscribing, as they say. We certainly very much appreciate that. Thank you once again. James House is with us, sitting around the dining room table, just talking about his
career. It's a real dining room. We're in the dining room.
Duncan, I love it. Yes. Yeah. I always love the sound in this room.
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah.
This is my writing room.
Yeah.
Do my radio show, everything. Yeah. So it's right here. Thank you for being here.
It'll be Thanksgiving dinner in here probably for too long.
Probably for too long. Yeah, absolutely. So living in L.A., you got to do some really cool things. I read somewhere that you worked with Dustin Hoffman.
I worked with him. He was the... I worked on the movie Ishtar.
Ishtar.
I did all the background. It's an honest
kind of a big...
After they did the movie, they did a legit album. They were recording it with Paul Williams, wrote all the songs, wrote all the bad songs in the movie. And then he wrote all these legit songs that they were going to put out afterwards. I don't know if they ever did. But anyway, I got hired by Paul to do the background. So I was the session leader. Uh-huh. And I hired myself and, of course, a guy named Rick Serrate and another artist, another singer. And so we were on call.
Okay.
To do backgrounds or whatever needs to be done. Yeah. And I had two studios going. Okay. So I was at Paul's, was cutting in Cherokee in L.A. Uh-huh. And then they were recording Dustin out at David Foster's place in Malibu. Mm-hmm. So I kept going back and forth. I get the call from Malibu and says, we got Dustin Hoffman out here and we're trying to cut a song with him. And we're having a rough time. Can you come out and maybe just help coach him through it? So that's what I did. I was... he was in the studio. I was in the room, and he was working on the track "Hello Ishtar." "Hello Ishtar." It's all he had to do, and he kept going "Hello Ishtar," "Hello." And he was all over the place,
You're out of order.
So I would sing it to him and try to take it back. So we'd go back and forth, and then we took an hour break and go out. And he does all his characters for me. It was really. Really a charming guy, and just would do any character you wanted for him.
Wow.
And at one point, I'm sitting there working with him, and he looks behind me. I'm behind me. He goes, "Oh, hey guys!" Yeah. I turn around, it's Madonna and then Sean Penn.
Oh my!
I'm telling Dustin Hoffman what to do. No, that sucks. that was that experience.
Oh my gosh, I bet. Yeah. But you did a lot of things. You did some other movies and stuff, didn't you? And
I did. I think I did every bad Charlie Sheen movie in the 80s. I sang a song in them. It's The Rafe. I can't even remember some of them.
Yeah.
But I was getting hired a lot to sing.
Yeah,
and then I sang in Ten Cup was, I think, one of the last
films
I
loved that movie.
So I'm in that every minute. Every hour, every day when he's like walking
in. Sure, that's right.
So, I did a lot of that.
I love that film.
Did a lot of anything in Los Angeles. Yeah. And I was actually acted in a movie.
Yeah? Did you? What movie?
The movie's called Scenes from the Gold Mine. It's a horrible movie. What do you do? I was out there at the time. And I was singing in the soundtrack, so they asked me if I wanted to read for this small part, and I did. And a bunch of other musicians were in it. Tim Schmidt was in it from the Eagles.
Stuff,
so. It was just
wow.
Being in L.A. at that point. I did some stuff out there. I mean, I was actually I sang a play of Zorro. They were putting a play for Zorro together.
Oh, really?
It was an interesting session. So I sang the Zorro parts with the L.A. Philharmonic.
Wow.
Back then, they taped the whole thing and, trying to get the gig. I did, who else did I work with? I did, Julio Iglesias was... He'd have an American singer do it, so I got hired to do a couple of his albums. Just go in and sing the English version of his records,
so he could learn the English
part. And then
part.
He wasn't there, but his producers were there. James, you're fantastic, So then I would, they'd send it to me ahead of time. I'd go in and, knock it out in English, so he would listen to the enunciation.
All the girls I love before.
I just remember, you're fantastic. You're
fantastic. Well, you are.
It was a living. Yeah. In fact, I did this one song movie, and out there, Toto was the session players, all those guys. So one of the tracks called "A Minute for Love," "A Minute for Love." It's basically me and Toto. So it was a really fun session. Yeah. I wasn't there at the time they cut the track, and I got invited to come over and sing it. So.
Wow, fantastic.
So that kind of, that stuff. And that's when I...
Yeah,
it was right around that time I recorded, I wrote "Hard Times."
"Hard Times."
Recorded it. Yeah.
That wasn't the first song you wrote, was it?
No, hard times?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, when did you start getting into songwriting?
Yeah, no, I started probably 14 or 15.
Really? When you were that young?
Yeah. No, it was all the records, you know, like I said, it was a lot of records played in our house. And my dad loved music, and my brother, we all loved music. Beatles were, you know, so the Beatles were writing everything, and Johnny Cash was writing everything. All the records that were coming, Buck Owens, those guys were writing their own stuff, yourself. A lot of it, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought, I better learn how to write songs if I want to do this. So I was, you know, because I was trying early.
So. Right. So how did you learn? Just by doing?
Yeah, you copy records. You know, you first of all, you steal them. Huh. You know, just get whatever you can off it.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to learn. Just, you know, actually, because you end up not really just capping, you know, the chord. We all know the same chords.
Yeah.
You know, this is, how many songs is this?
Yeah. Go 1/4, 1/5.
What if I speed it up here?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a run, you know. Yeah. So yeah, it's absolutely. They're going to put it's the same stuff, you
there
know.
There you go.
So that's the way to learn. Whatever you love, you know, whatever music. I'd say it's, you know, better than just learning guitar. Learn songs.
Yeah.
It's much more entertaining
to
learn a song. And I learned off the, but now you can go to the College of YouTube. Back then we all used this Mel Bay book. You probably know it.
Yes.
And you'd teach you one chord. You learn C chord for about a week. Week two, you learn to the F. You
know? F was the worst for me. Yeah. I cried over F.
Yeah, that's
I'll never do that.
Yeah, no. I learned this F. This is my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's a good one. And then, you know, then you learn the song after that. So that's how we all
pretty cool.
We learn. And then the kid down the block knew this chord. Oh, man, you're cool.
B7, right?
Yeah, B7 and E minor.
And E minor. You know, I remember reading a story or hearing a story being told where Lennon and McCartney hopped on a bus, paid to because some guy across town knew how to play a B7.
B7.
Yeah.
It changed their lives.
It changed their lives. Yeah. They put a lot of sevens and stuff.
And ours, too. Yeah, a lot of sevens.
A lot of sevens. Yeah. Exactly. Wow. Can you imagine? Yeah. And I think about those guys, and they were just kids. 22,
pretty amazing kids.
Pretty amazing kids to think about.
Yeah, they set a bunch of us off on this journey.
Yes, they did.
It set me off. I mean, I watched it that night, and I knew what I wanted to do, but then I really knew what I wanted to do.
Did you have a guitar by then?
I did. I was already playing. I was 10 years old. Mom and dad, we had a guitar from the time I was 5 or 6.
Now, did your dad play? I know they sang.
They did just sang. You know, they were just singers. And yeah, they had an accompaniment. They had a guy named Ben Losgard was their guitar player, but mostly it was a cappella, a lot of that. Yeah. They had actually been on, they were on the Arthur Godfrey show.
Really?
And were, you know, doing very well on that.
Wow.
And so that was, they were actually back in New York and getting ready. But at that point, they really got an agent and management and they were ready to take off.
Right.
But one of the uncles just said, I can't do this. I got 4 kids at home.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to leave them. And so, one brother, it was all for one and one for all. But they all did well, and they put their energy in. I grew up, and I was very, very lucky to be raised by a real village of people. My aunts, my uncles, cousins. You know, we were really beautifully insulated in a good way, and lots of music. And I still talk to my cousins and go, "Can you believe that? How we were got to hang out and life?" And it was.
At family gatherings, did you have to bring out the guitar and play? And
There was no time. The family didn't show up. Everybody didn't start singing. My dad and uncles.
You know,
every time I saw my dad, even when
it
we
was
were
a given.
Having a rough time, it was like, from this valley. We'd go right into it, and awesome. Sing two-part harmony.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So you learned harmony, too, at
the beginning. That was a big deal, learning harmony. I listened to all 4 of them. In fact, my uncles and dad, they used to do a song. It was 4 separate songs.
Yeah.
They'd all take a lead. It was a little bit they did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 4 nursery rhymes. So one of them sings Sam Jack, Little Bo Peep had lost a sheep. Mm-hmm. Dad would sing, a song, 6 pence. Anyway, 4 of them. And then they'd all 4 sing 4 separate songs in 4-part harmony.
Oh.
And it was one of the most, all of us kids would just go, do the
Tell me you've got recordings.
Do the
this.
We do. And it's pretty amazing to even hear because you're listening to 4 separate songs in 4-part harmony.
It's crazy.
And it works.
It's crazy.
It was the showstopper. It's
awesome.
Yeah, I had them. When I played in the Klamath Falls when I was out on tour in the 90s, I had them come up and they did it. They blew me off stage. So I was like, good night.
Never again.
When they did that, people were like, whoa.
Wow. That's just crazy. Well, let's jump up a few gears. Let's talk about the This Is Me, Missing You.
Yeah.
That was an exciting time in your life.
It was. You know, at that point, I'd been on Warner Brothers Records,
yeah,
Atlantic Records, and MCA Records. I'd gone through three
working
record
for MCA.
Deals. Yeah. And then at this point, I got signed to Epic Records. I'd had a couple of hits before that. I'd written in a week or two. And Ain't That Lonely for Dwight Yoakam.
Great song.
So I got another record deal out of, you know, I'm at this point, I'm 33 years old. You know, so it's pretty...
It's kind of old for an artist.
It is here, you know. Yeah, anyway.
Because they're signing embryos these days.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They are.
Yeah.
I got the deal, and it was, you know, it was a great... I went out and toured like mad for...
You did.
For two or three years. We did like 230 shows 1 year, and radio shows, too. So it was more like 500 shows.
I just can't imagine. People think about the fame and the... Yeah. But it's hard work, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, I'll tell you, the best time is when you're on stage. Everything else is you're moving, and you're going to one place.
Then that's where the work is.
That's you actually get to sit still and sing, you know, stand still and move around. But it's... Yeah. That's when you really it's all worth it. We're on stage and you're
going, I used to feel bad for you artists when you'd come in and do that. Because I always put you on the morning show, right?
Oh, when you're promoting 6 a.m. Yeah.
6 a.m. You've been playing all night and your voice is like...
Still Briggs and Stratton.
You're
starting to... You hear teardrops, you know.
Always feel bad. But anyway, I need to hear another song. Really, what do you want?
Well, I'll do that song.
I love that song.
The song was, you know, How They Get Written. I wrote this with Monty Powell and Debbie Cochran.
Cochran. I love Debbie Cochran.
Right.
With NSAI for years.
We had three of us went up, you know, we were up at Maypop, which is a little place in Alabama. Used to own a music row.
Wow.
And we were taking a break. We were somewhere around, and I was using the bathroom. And I hear Monty playing something in the next room. And I walk in and go, "Did you say this is Me Missing You?" And he goes, "No, but that'll work, you know." So there it was, and then Debbie was going, "Oh, we should do this hear, see, feel, touch lyric. You hear, touch, you know. That's for that.
Love it."
You hear teardrops falling like rain on the rooftops. If you don't know what you're listening to, this is me missing you. You see lonely, clear skies turning stormy, lightning strikes and all you see is blue. This is me missing you. And while you're gone, this is the only way to let you know your love is always safe. You feel heartbreak, distant thunder like an earthquake. If you wonder why the earth moves, this is me missing you. And while you're gone, this is the only way let you know your love is always safe. If you touch empty, reach in the darkness and don't find me, then you'll know what I'm going through. This is me missing you. This is me missing you. This is me missing you. This is me missing you.
That's awesome. James House is our guest, Songwriter Connection Podcast. Beautiful. Right here live around the dining room table.
Great. Yeah. Love it here.
You know, being from California, what was it like having Dwight Yoakam cut?
Yeah. Well, I remember seeing Dwight over at the Palomino.
Yeah.
I was going, wow, you know, this guy's just, this is cool.
Yeah.
This is rocking country, you know, what I like.
Yeah.
You know, because even back in the day, Buck was like rocking country, that, you know,
yeah.
Nashville was doing the Countrypolitan thing, which yep. we also love too, but,
yeah.
but then Buck rocked. So,
yeah,
to hear this guy do it and do it really a tribute and take it to another level. And Pete Anderson was badass too on guitar. He was
yeah.
great. And so, yeah, to get him to, we wrote that with Kostas Lazaridis, who was one of the best songwriters the last 25 years.
Good know? Irish name.
Yeah, good yeah. Irish name. yeah. You know, he's just grew up in Montana.
Yeah.
Greek immigrant kid, yeah. just a kid.
Of course.
But has this amazing voice and can wow. and wrote Timber, I'm Falling in Love.
Oh, great stuff.
Just great stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. And so we'd written a bunch of songs, Kostas and I, and that particular day, we worked on it. I walked in with an idea and I thought it was okay. And he said, so we took a break for a minute and was like, this wasn't working. So we just had a conversation. He goes, so what are you getting back? My girlfriend and I had broken up. And he goes, you guys getting back together? And I was like, nah, man, I ain't that lonely yet.
Oh.
he goes, well, we're going to write that.
We're going to write
that. So that was like literally 20 minutes later. I'm just like, they're going to, you know, mess with the melody. And he goes, what do you think of these words? And I was like, oh, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah. It's word banding. So, you know, your melodies were always just, and I always say that the melody always hits me first.
Yeah.
And then like the second or third listening, the lyrics put me away.
Yeah.
The melody first?
Yeah, well, it's like George,
the stupidest question to ask.
It's like George Jones said, if you're sad, you listen to the words. If you're in a good place, you listen to the melody.
George said that.
Yeah. And
wow.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I...
I'm cool.
Behind the curtain of songwriting, it's melodies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the great story is Paul McCartney dreamed the melody to Yesterday.
Yeah.
And he woke up and put it down, and but it was called Scrambled Eggs.
He didn't have words.
It's, yeah, it didn't yeah. have words to it. So, yeah, yeah. it's...
Something.
It's really important to me. Just,
yeah,
that's how I write. I come from that, you know.
Yeah, I think I do too. Same way.
What was the the song? Just a little bit of. You keep going on the telephone. You say you're all alone, girl. That's real sad. You know.
Yeah.
So it's fun to
beautiful
sing that one.
Yeah. What's with the Beach Boys? You had something with the Beach Boys?
Yeah. Well, you know, they came into town.
Coming to town,
they had already they cut that album up in Chicago, and with the mind of coming into town, have country singers.
Yeah,
but they did their thing first, so it was uh-huh. like they needed people who could fit into the slot, and I got auditioned basically to do Little Deuce Coupe, you know,
Little Deuce Coupe,
and
wow.
I went and sang it, and I remember Brian going, "You sound like Elvis." He did, I'm doing Elvis' voice here. So, yeah, and I got the tour.
Wow.
And went out and did a video with him and did wow. opened up for 21 shows. And wow. Brian came out for two of them.
Jake.
He did the Letterman show. With you can see me on Letterman with them.
Oh,
and
okay.
I got the Beach Boys backing me up, which was amazing. And so I watch it to this day and go, oh, my God, the
Beach
harmonies.
Boys backing you up.
Yeah, they were singing harmonies and
that's
stuff. And
crazy.
Yeah, and the shows were great. And they, you know, people come to a Beach Boys show. Brian was still alive. The whole band yeah. came out for a little bit. Yeah. In fact, at one moment when Brian joined the tour, they hadn't seen him in a long time. Those, you know, those guys, their history, we all know about them, infighting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But this particular moment, I was in a radio station back room about the size of your dream, in fact, half the size.
Half the size of it.
And I'm in there along with the Beach Boys. And they decide to warm up a little bit, and they did. And Brian walks in, and they did it in my room, a cappella. And I'm standing there going,
yeah.
And I liked them before, but this was a force of nature that I'd never heard. That five voices, you know.
And you believe that?
And
you loved to have been a fly on the wall.
It was amazing, and then you know the tour was great. I got they were just the best guys, you know,
yeah.
to hang out with at that point. They treated us really great,
and
you know, they invited us all. I got to do all the anytime they're doing handprints on anything, I got to do it. And
that's cool.
You know, it was great guys. So yeah, and plus the voices were like stunning too.
You're like, I have to pinch myself. Am I dreaming? Is it rude? Yeah.
You know, I remember they were huge in Sacramento. It was one of their big places where they would come to. And
yeah,
and you know, and there's a lot of stories, but. Basically, I'll tell you one story. After we did a Letterman show,
mm-hmm.
we had a gig waiting for us up in Connecticut. So from the Letterman show, it's a limo down to the helipad, and we get on the helicopter. I'm in a helicopter. with the Beach Boys. Brian, everybody, just the guys, you know, and me.
Yeah.
And Al Jardine brings a sandwich up there. And for once, I see these kids from Hawthorne being kids again. He pulls out the sandwich that he bought from a vendor. And he started tore off five pieces for all the guys and one for me. And they were like just eating this. And I'm like, I look around, I go, these are just five kids from Hawthorne that did really well, you know?
Yeah.
And as soon as they get off the, you know, the helicopter, it's like, right. But at that moment, they were cousins and friends again for just, you know. So we land basically behind the venue's going, my band's on stage. Uh-huh. And the helicopter, we land behind the venue. I get off the helicopter and go right on stage.
Oh my.
It was one of those outdoor amphitheaters and it was great.
Great.
They were up there playing
amazing
the
stuff.
Warm-up, so
absolutely.
It was a rock star moment.
Yeah. So, how much of your time these days are writing? You still writing
all the time? Yeah. All the time. I work a lot with Songwriting for Soldiers too. And
Songwriting for Soldiers.
Yeah. So
great organization.
I go out a couple of times a month and write with vets, and that's the new project I'm working on. Mm-hmm. In the studio. I've cut most of the tracks that I've written. I don't know. I think 150 songs or something in the last 10 years with them. And
with them,
going through, and I've cut 10 of them. Right. And, you know, I'm just kind of wrapping those up. And then I'm going to do the same deal. Just, you know, the stories I've heard over the years of what they've been through. And, you know, it's not only the vets, it's their families. And when they come back, there's couples getting back and trying to hold on to each other. And so all those stories, and so I'm doing the stories and leading into the songs that I've written with them, and it's really been a joy to go back through all the stuff, and you know, the sacrifices they make, and they just want to live a normal life again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like it's easy to go into the service. It's tough to come out, you know, because they lose a lot of camaraderie, they lose purpose, you know, I have an empathy for them and their families. So
that's great work.
It's something I love to do. And to write from their perspective.
Right.
All of us writers, about 10, 12 of us do it with this particular Songwriting with Soldiers. How much we get back from this. Because you're just taking their words, you know, and giving it back to them. And it's a powerful thing to take their words and sing it right back to them with a melody.
Yeah.
It's emotional.
Yeah.
And I can't say enough.
And therapeutic.
It's therapeutic and everything else. And we just do music. We don't do anything else. You know, just that enough is alone, be heard and take their words and hand it back to them.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm really excited about that. That project's going to be coming out in the spring.
You record some of this music too? Or?
Yeah, no, I've done most all the albums. I've been playing everything I do. I got a home studio. So
Yeah. So all these new songs on this Lost Laurel Canyon, you produced all of them?
I did. I produced it and played everything but bass.
Everything but bass?
I think that's,
really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know. I've been doing this for a while,
so I can
get around on everything. I'm slow, but I'm persistent, you know. So if you watch, anybody's ever watched the new Beatle
Get Back,
you kind of see, you know, they were incredible when they got to it finally, but I kind of like take that role on seriously, you know. And then turns into, you know, so it's kind of.
I got you.
Just keep going. But it's a labor of love. And I get up every day and thank my lucky stars. And I'm grateful that
gratitude is the best thing, I think.
Every day.
Absolutely.
Grateful.
How about one more song? And then maybe you can tell us about this new project you're doing real briefly. And we'll take her out. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. What I'll do. This is one of my favorite songs. I mean, Broken Wing is...
I love that.
To that is tough, but, you know, this...
It's so hard to sing.
I wrote this with Gary. Yeah, it's... This is a song about procrastination, so... Yeah, amazing it ever got written.
I'll finish it tomorrow, right?
In a week or two...
Yes.
I would have been ready... Wouldn't know what to say. But I missed my chance when the words I love you came just a little too late. In a week or two, it's gonna bring you diamonds. In a week or two, a long, long string of pearls. And we would run down to the river at night,
sailed away, just me and you, in a week or two. Little more time is all I needed. Somehow fall became spring. You put off today what you can do tomorrow. Sometimes you don't do a thing. In a week or two, I was gonna bring you diamonds. In a week or two, a long, long string of pearls, and we would have ridden down to the river at night, sailed away, just me and you, in a week or two. These words in my heart never had a chance to be heard. Well, I'm telling you now, but it's a word. In a week or two, I was gonna bring you diamonds. In a week or two, and long arms to the pearls, and we would have run down to the river at night, sailed away, just me and you. In a week or two.
Huge hit for Diamond Rio. The co-writers there, James House, is our guest. What that with Gary Burr, right?
Gary Burr is...
great song.
Yeah, man. He was like one of my favorite people, yeah, too.
Awesome. The new book.
Yes.
Working on that right now. You have a title for it yet? Or?
I do. It's called... I got a week or two in my brain. Sorry. I've got it right here. Actually, I've got the songs. Forged by Fire.
Forged by Fire.
Yeah.
Good title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the working title of it right now.
We can't wait for that to come
out. I'm really looking forward to having everybody hear that and hear the songs and hear the words of the veterans, you know.
Yeah.
Mary Gaucher did one.
Mary Gaucher
about 3-4 years ago. Yes. It did really well. It was Rosary B. And it was just really a wonderful record. And I actually was on the Grammy,
I think, or at least nominated for
Grammy. She got nominated for Grammy. I was on the Grand Ole Opry with her.
Wow.
And the vet that she wrote brought on the Opry.
Wow.
He was still in a wheelchair, and it's done so much for his life. He's up and walking.
Oh.
It's not like Oral Roberts or anything. It was not. It was just the power of music and it getting back his life again. And it's the power of music, and it's the equalizer out of all this.
It certainly is.
If there's any madness, I refuse to be separated from fellow human beings.
Mm.
And music brings us together. And
it
that's
sure does.
What I've always been about.
So we need it more than ever right now.
More than ever.
More than ever. Thanks for your time.
Thank
the
you,
book,
Dave.
Folks, get the book. It's Lost in Laurel Canyon. You'll see it. Audible. It's right online.
Yeah.
I know you're going to love it. And you're going to listen to it time and time again. Like I did.
I speak in this voice, by the way.
You got a great voice. It's fantastic. Yeah. Those of you listening, keep writing. Right on. And thanks for joining us, okay?
All right.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening, keep creating, and keep the melodies alive.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are
unique. Get more with GEICO.